It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
All right. We got to talk about whatever the heck's going on with the San Francisco 49ers. Beyond just what's going on in the field, not a super encouraging day of news out of Santa Clara yesterday. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about Monday Night Football. But before we do that, 99 degrees on September 24th. This is what we're doing now?
Kyle, it's weather. I'm wearing a sweatshirt today. I wore a zip
outrageous.
Up yesterday.
It's outrageous that you're doing that.
I'm done. I don't care. I mean, first of all, it's cold in here. Usually it's cold in here.
I have to sit next to the computers, which just radiate heat the whole show. So maybe that's what impacts me. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, this side does not radiate. Like
I wish.
I don't know. What do you keep your temperature set at home?
78.
So
that's the working like temp at night if we have to turn the AC on, which like we couldn't open our windows last night. Oh. It's supposed to be fall, bro. Like it's football season. We had Monday night doubleheader last night. I'm supposed to be cozy at night I drink decaf at night because I'm a 97-year-old man. I'll drink a little decaf. And it's nice and cool, and I got a blanket and some sweats on and a hoodie, and man, this is just the best. It's my favorite time of the year, but it's 99 degrees today, and it is officially fall.
That's
ridiculous.
Wild.
It's ridiculous.
I refuse to acknowledge what's happening outside. The weather, I choose when to change my outfits, Kyle. I choose. No one else.
That's your prerogative. I have to apologize to my hoodies every morning like it's not time, guys.
The world is not the boss of me.
Good for you, man. brutal. I was really looking forward to a nice, cool start to the football season. Alas, here we are, 99 degrees here in Sacramento on this Tuesday, September 24th. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us on ESPN 1320. Thank you, everybody, hanging out on the free Odyssey app. And, of course, everybody in the chatty house at youtube.com/ESPN1320 and twitch.tv/ESPN1320. If you would like to join the program, you can do so in the chatty house or... you can hit the Elk Grove Kia talk line, 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 is the Elk Grove Kia talk line. We would love to hear from you today. James, I'm pulling the plug. Niners season's over, bro.
It's over.
They're cooked. Like, they might make the playoffs. They might win 10 games. They might go to the playoffs. Like, no, sure. But let's rewind a little bit to 2020. This is starting to have a 2020 vibe to me. In 2020, you had D4 dealing with an injury all year, which, like, pick a year that he wasn't.
Yeah.
Richard Sherman was dealing with an injury to start that year. Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas both go down in week two. Jordan Reed, I believe, went down in week three. Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt in week two, and he was in and out of the lineup all year that year. And nothing just ever quite aligned the year after the 49ers went to the Super Bowl. This year, you have Christian McCaffrey dealing with an Achilles injury that is so bad that he's now going to Germany to seek treatment.
Yeah, this is getting weird.
Very odd. Very odd. I shouldn't say seek treatment. He's seeing a specialist about help with his recovery, according to Kyle Shanahan. Whatever that means.
I wonder, did like Lance Armstrong go with him?
Maybe.
Like,
but real quick, we'll put a pin in the Christian McCaffrey Germany thing for a second because I want to dive into that. But we have Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel's already missing games,
yep.
George Kittle's already dealing with a hamstring thing, mm-hmm. Travarius Ward's dealing with hamstring and knee things, Javon Hargrave now out for the year, according to Kyle Shanahan, a partially torn triceps, team is recommending surgery.
What exactly happened there? Because when you get done with a game, they ask about injuries. Mm-hmm. After the game. Was this mentioned yesterday?
Yeah.
Well,
so
on Sunday.
So on Sunday, Shanahan said he was dealing with a triceps thing, but they were hopeful that it was just a contusion.
Mm.
And that little piece of knowledge from Kyle Shanahan. Oh, we're hopeful it's just a contusion. Just like Christian McCaffrey. Oh, it's just a calf strain. And now Brock Purdy. Oh, it's just back soreness. MRI was clean. We're hoping he's practicing Wednesday. I don't trust it. I can't sit here on Tuesday and be like, oh yeah, Brock Purdy's going to be there Wednesday. Yeah, for sure. Because I was also like, oh, okay, Javon Hargrave just got a bad bruise. He'll be fine. Nope, done for the year.
The fact that you took a guy in for an MRI for a back injury, that's usually...
Right.
Usually a problem.
Right. Just if he woke up on Tuesday, it would make sense. If he woke up and threw it 30 times, ran it 10 times. So he's involved in 40 of those plays.
Yep.
Passed it 30 times, run it 10 times. Like, yeah, I'm sure his back was a little sore, but there's a difference between like, hey, you know what, back's a little stiff, and hey, my back hurts. Let's get in the MRI machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes, dude. So all of these signs... And again, maybe they win 10 games. Maybe everybody gets healthy by week 8 and they go into the bye week healthy and they come out of the bye week, they go on a tear. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. It's possible.
But all of these injuries that are stacking up, coming off of a Super Bowl loss, all of this feels like 2020 to me. This is just big 2020 vibes. And not even that, because in 2020, they were 2-1 after 3 games, FYI. They went on the road to New York twice. They played the Jets and Giants back-to-back weeks.
Mm.
And there are 2-1 coming out of those.
Like, look, I think we had bad vibes all the way through training camp.
Dreadful.
We thought that the vibes may have picked up the week before. Week 1, you have good vibes.
Yes. Good win.
That was it. Like, the vibes have gone progressively downhill.
Yes.
Since that moment.
Yes.
And I don't know how you pull out of it. I don't know how you figure out the good vibes again. And what is going to happen to Brandon Allen's quarterback for 1 or 2 weeks?
Before I hit the full panic button on Brock Purdy, I gotta wait till Wednesday.
Yeah,
I wait till tomorrow and see what his status is, because he might be a full participant in practice or limited on Wednesday and then full Thursday and Friday, and everything will be fine. That's kind of where I'm. But like I said, given the amount of times we've heard this, you're like, it's nothing, and then it turns into this like 6 or 8 week thing or season long thing. The red flags are up. The antennas are up. And that's just going to be it all year. Maybe I'm being alarmist. Maybe I'm being irrational. I am being irrational, probably. But maybe that's it. And maybe the Niners get healthy and they figure out their pass rush and everything's hunky-dory and they go to the playoffs and they win the NFC West. And okay, yeah, week 3. It was week 3. Who cares? But when you're trying to project this out, it doesn't look good.
No.
And that's the worrying thing to me. My red flags and antennas are going to be up all year.
Yeah, they've put us in this situation, and it's awkward. And I don't know, you know, what the end answer is for them, but this is feeling more and more like a season that's sort of doomed. But I'm not ready to play taps yet. I know you're like ready. I'm not bringing in the bugle yet.
I just that's the thing. It's if I had to bet on the 49ers right now,
mm-hmm.
Over or under, I don't know, 8.5 wins. Like, I'll still bet the over. I'm not,
yeah.
But at the same time, when you're sitting here in week 3 and going, okay, what information have we gathered so far through 3 weeks of the season? What information do we have? Not much of it is good for the 49ers. And that's kind of where I'm sitting is, can they turn it around? Like, yeah, no doubt. Like, there are 15 weeks left in this season. Like, they have time to turn it around and figure this thing out. And okay, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that is projection and sunshine and rainbows. I've got nothing for you on the based on what we've seen through 3 weeks. Especially now that if we had done a show today and Javon Hargrave wasn't done for the year.
Mm-hmm.
Something we might have talked about is, and something I guess we'll talk about anyway, but something we might have talked about is, hey, how do they fix this pass rush? I thought Javon Hargrave was their best pass rusher on Sunday. Now he's done.
Yeah.
He's gone. Like, your answers at this very important thing for your defense, this very important spot, your defensive fundamentals, your defensive foundation revolves around, we're going to rush the passer and affect the quarterback. With no Javon Hargrave, I don't know how they're doing that. Because you can't rely on Nick Bosa to be that guy, even though you're supposed to.
Yep. So,
okay, maybe Nick Bosa goes Superman and has 3 sacks in the next game and takes over and he helps steady the ship until they get reinforcements. I don't know. You need more from Leonard Floyd, who's their big offseason free agent acquisition. Like, that was going to be a problem whether Javon Hargrave was healthy or not. And now that he's not, that huge problem they have is just exacerbated big time.
It feels like they already need to make a move.
Yes.
already.
Yes.
Like, and I know Shanahan was asked about it yesterday, whether, you know, they'll consider bringing someone in. He said they're going to look at the practice squad a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's some guys out there that aren't signed right now. We'll kind of see. But at this point, it's probably time to dig in a little deeper and, mm-hmm. and start to look at, you know, your draft picks that you can't seem to figure out in the middle rounds mm-hmm. and go see if you can find yourself a couple of defensive linemen. So
yeah, man, I'm with you. If there's a time to start unloading draft picks to bring in reinforcements, they did it last year twice.
Yeah,
and they were in a better situation last year than they are right now. So I fully expect them to make a move. We can talk about that in a bit. But Christian McCaffrey going to Germany to see a specialist about help with his recovery from Achilles tendonitis. Now, I was reading up on this because I remembered Peyton Manning going to Europe for his neck injury.
Mm.
And in a story that ESPN wrote back in 2011, a person they interviewed in the story speculated that as many as half a dozen, potentially more NFL players had gone overseas to various places to receive injury treatments that basically aren't allowed here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Just because of bureaucratic red tape or something with the government or whatever it is, they can't receive these treatments in the United States. The person speculated that the U.S. was perhaps 10 years behind these kind of injury recovery treatments.
Okay.
So I don't know if Christian McCaffrey is over there getting a treatment specifically. And if he is this because, he had some kind of setback? And it looked like 4 weeks was turning to six, might turn to 10, might turn to the season. Or, and again, I don't know. These are just the questions I have, and we're probably never going to get an answer. Or is it, hey, this was probably like a 6 to 8 week thing, but the Niners are looking right now and going, hey, we can't afford to be without Christian McCaffrey for 6 to 8 weeks. Can we expedite this process a little bit? And is that what he's... Or is he going because... He got different opinions from doctors in the U.S., so he went, hey, there's this doctor that I got recommended to in Germany, so I'm going to go see him and get his thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea, but it's definitely, like, on the surface, it's not good.
This is not ideal.
It's suboptimal.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all remember, like, Kobe Bryant going to get, like, the PRP treatment, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that that's allowed here now. So they clearly have something else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, the plasma-rich injections are...
Yeah, plasma injections.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's something like they take your blood and then they remove the platelets and...
I have no clue.
Yeah, they do some sort of separating of something and then they re-inject some... I don't know.
You could tell me anything about this and I'll believe it.
Okay.
Like anything you tell me is just going to be the thing that I tell people now.
It regrows his leg.
Yes.
His leg fell off.
Yeah.
They are now regrowing a leg in Germany.
So in my brain, I thought Kobe Bryant had gone overseas for his Achilles.
Yeah, when but it I wasn't started for the surgery.
It was his knee.
Oh,
He went overseas like multiple times to receive these injections in his knee.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I'm not a doctor, and I wasn't going to go deep dive into what's allowed and what's not in the U.S. Maybe we'll get some information at some point about what Christian McCaffrey's got going on in Germany, and maybe he comes back fully healthy this year at some point. But I didn't take that as like, good, he's going overseas to get treatment. Awesome.
No.
I was anticipating, he's going to sit out for 6 weeks, they're just going to rehab, and then he's going to try and get through 11 games and a playoff run.
On a good note for McCaffrey, I mean, it's a beautiful country like Germany. Like,
I really want to visit someday.
Yeah, I mean, he's
you there for Oktoberfest.
He might miss Oktoberfest because it's not October yet.
I thought I saw it started.
Maybe it did. It's also I don't believe it's 99 degrees there right now.
No.
So,
What's it? Munich weather? I'm looking it up.
Oh. Is that where he's going?
I don't know. It just
Munchen?
That's 62 degrees and raining in Germany today. I'm Googling Oktoberfest start date. If this says October 1st, I'm going to be so mad. I'm going to be really mad. Let's go. Saturday, September 21.
Oh,
come
yeah.
Come on. That's what he's doing. That's the treatment he's getting. Just a bunch of German beer.
We get video of him wearing lederhosen. That's just spectacular.
He's limping around in his lederhosen. Man, I just, like I said, I will, the Niners are favored by 10.5 points this week against New England. Maybe they beat New England. Maybe they get a nice division win against the Cardinals in week 5. They're 3-2 and everything's back on track. And we're going, man, they're playing well and they're not even healthy yet. That is on the table, no doubt. But I have no reason to believe, outside of just going like, hey, here's the optimist view. Here's the sunshine and rainbows view. I have no reason to believe, based on everything we've seen through 3 weeks, based on the injury news we got from Kyle Shanahan yesterday, and frankly, that we've gotten from Kyle Shanahan, like, this isn't new. They had to cancel joint practices in the preseason because they were so banged up.
Mm.
Like, this isn't some new thing. They've been dealing with this. So I just, again, my mind goes directly to 2020. That season was a disaster. I don't necessarily think that this season gets as bad as 2020 did, but it's really, really difficult, based on the information we know, to not get there.
Okay, so what if, let me do a what if for you here.
Please.
What if Ronnie Bell would have caught that pass, the 49ers would have kicked a field goal, and they would have won this game this last week? How different would you feel?
Is Javon Hargrave still out for the year?
Yeah.
Not that different.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit, because maybe I would talk myself into, oh, they found a way to win. That's just a gritty performance. That's a great one. Maybe. But at the same time, I could see myself, knowing how I am, going, hey, you needed a last-second field goal to beat the Rams.
Mm.
That version of the Rams, you had to hang on to beat them. That doesn't bode well. That's probably where my mindset would be.
Okay.
But, I mean, maybe. I definitely think the analysis of like Brock Purdy would be a lot different coming out of the game. There were people, so I do the football hour on 95.7 The Game on Mondays from 6 to 7. And I dial in early, and I just kind of listen to what's happened on the station, so I get a vibe for how people in the Bay Area are feeling. And apparently there were people yesterday, like, blaming Brock Purdy.
Well,
for Sunday's game?
That's crazy. Like
what?
Even like in the chat, I think people were calling like, hey, why are you guys blaming Brock Purdy? And I said, no, like, Brock Purdy probably shouldn't have thrown the ball to Ronnie Bell. You should have learned in the past that that's not the guy that you want to hit right there, because he has a history of dropping the ball. But like, I'm not blaming Brock Purdy, but Brock Purdy was incredible in that game.
Yeah, I just, that was nuts to me.
Yeah.
That actually brings me to Monday Night Football. We had two Monday Night. How do you feel about the Monday Night doubleheader?
I was surprised. I didn't know that the game had already started. I missed the mm-hmm. start of the early game. And
yeah,
the only reason I knew is because I got an alert that that my running back had actually started getting some receiving yards. And, you know, I may or may not have then, hit 3 out of 5 in my prize pick.
Mm.
So I got that alert, and I'm nice. Like, oh man, the game already started. So I flicked on the game. I was watching the game, and then we took the boys out to dinner. We watched the game from like a Mexican food restaurant. And like, look, I don't hate it. I just need Sundays not to be degraded.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I get that for sure. I guess for me, it helps when there's two games, when one of them is a 47-10 blowout. That's, what was it, 34-3 at halftime?
Oh, it wasn't even, it was
27-3 at halftime.
An embarrassment.
What was the score at the half? 34-3 at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice having another game that was looked like a college football game. It was just back and forth and not a ton of defense, and you get a 38-33 final. It was nice having that to lean on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what if both games are blowouts and you've just got two Monday Night Football games to track?
Yeah.
I understand the argument for it. Where I land on this is, I so prefer having one game on.
Yeah.
Because then if it stinks, all right, I'm doing something else while I keep half an eye on the game in case something weird happens. I much prefer the one game.
No, I'm with you. I kind of prefer the one game as well. I didn't hate it, but I also think that the the weekend slate of games was good. If the weekend slate wasn't good, I would have been like annoyed, greatly annoyed.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to break it up too much. I don't understand why they did it this way. Because now you got four teams that are playing on a short week as opposed to two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I guess we'll see moving forward. I know I think more of these Monday night doubleheaders coming up. But last night, Buffalo beats Jacksonville 47-10. Y'all, the Trevor Lawrence thing, I'm out. I am all the way out on Trevor Lawrence. First it was Urban Meyer's fault. Then it was his wide receiver's fault. Then it was Doug Peterson's fault. And it's Trent Baalke's fault. And when are we going to fight? If you're having to fire multiple head coaches and a GM to get your quarterback where he needs to go, maybe your quarterback's just not that good.
It's very possible he's not that good.
Maybe that's just it. Because, and we've had this discussion before, and with Justin Herbert, it's a little different. But Trevor Lawrence falls in this bucket to me of this quarterback that you see the football film people on Twitter are just like, man, here's this super cut of all these awesome throws that Trevor Lawrence made last year that were either caught or dropped. Look at how many touchdowns he should have had. Look at all the interceptions he shouldn't have thrown. Okay. What about last night? What about all the games where he just flat out didn't play well? Save your super cuts. Shout out haircuts. Save your super cuts of his good throws. Show me his full games. If you're going to put Trevor Lawrence in that echelon of quarterbacker, like, man, game-changing player, but he needs better receivers, oh, and better running backs, oh, and a better coach, oh, and a better GM, like, then take him out of that tier of quarterback who's just, like, elite and going to be the rising tide that raises all boats, because he's not.
No.
He is flat out not that dude, and that's okay. We just need to change the assessment because we've been hearing about Trevor Lawrence. Damian talks about this all the time on D'Lo and Casey coming up at noon here on ESPN 1320. We've been hearing about Trevor Lawrence since he was like 15 years old. And then he goes and wins a national title, beats Alabama for Clemson as a freshman. This is going to be the number one pick in the draft. This is a second coming, man. Best quarterback prospect since Peyton Manning or whoever. Man, this guy's built to be a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to the Jags, number one overall. Okay, you got ruined year one by Urban Meyer. Okay, yeah, no, that's okay. But year two, okay, yeah, here he goes. I'm sick of it. I don't care anymore, man. He's not that guy. He's not that guy, pal.
His regression last year was like so alarming. You know, you throw 21 touchdowns, you throw 14 picks. He's thrown, you know, his rookie season, he threw 17 picks. Again, you can blame it on whatever. Rookie quarterbacks, whatever you want to say. But I think when we watch other quarterbacks around the league and we start to see their progression into something special, like we're in year four now and you're not going anywhere. You're not elevating the team. I'm waiting for that moment where you see it. And there's just so many throws that are off by just a little bit. There's just like the inaccuracy of like throwing the ball to somebody's back shoulder or like throwing the ball too far to the sideline. Like it's just one thing after another. There is no flow. There is no like threat of him doing something dangerous ever. And so, I mean, they've got good running backs. They've spent a little bit of money on wide receivers. Not, you know, outlandish amounts of money on like just the best talent that there is. But you're still like every single time you watch him, he's just not it. He's not the focal point of any, like, and Joe Burrow has had plenty of mistakes in his career. Well,
no doubt.
But he's actually led a team to the Super Bowl.
I have seen Joe Burrow win games.
Oh, yeah. Multiple.
And be a dog.
Yes. Yeah. And he's been a lot more beat up than Trevor Lawrence. I just like, Trevor Lawrence just looks like almost like a created quarterback that, you know, on some video game that you think is going to be great. And, you know, he has all the attributes and nothing to put all those attributes together. Whatever it is that a quarterback has that makes them be able to elevate a team, he does not have it. And I don't know if he'll ever have it. And I personally, like, for him, for his own sanity, he probably needs a different look. He needs to go somewhere else. And I don't, they don't.
You're talking about his hair.
They don't, well, yeah. They don't do that with quarterbacks for some reason. It's not something that usually happens where a quarterback needs a fresh start somewhere. unless they're like a bad quarterback that hasn't worked out at all. He's like, you almost wonder what he would look like somewhere else. But again, he's a lot more Derek Carr than he is Joe Burrow, or that he is one of these other guys at this point. And that's fine, but let's stop with he's the next, you know.
Yeah, I understand. So he took that leap in year two.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, there it is. They got him a real coach. They got him some weapons. Here comes Trevor Lawrence. And then he regressed last year, and now he's regressing again this year.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just Jordan Poole. Maybe he had that one awesome year, and it turns out, hey, you know what? Actually, all those not-so-great years, the one great year was the outlier.
Oh, yeah. That's
maybe
what I'm feeling.
Maybe it's just that. But I just, that interception he threw to DeMar Hamlin last night, which shout out to DeMar Hamlin, by the way.
Yeah.
Just abominable. And I go back, and did you see the one sack he took where he's in the pocket and he spun away from nobody and like ran into his own offensive lineman and then tried to back out and then get sacked? It's like, bro, I watched everybody, every film dork that posts about, and I say that with all due respect, and every film person on Twitter who posts about Trevor Lawrence and look at all these great throws he makes, I watched those same people when Jimmy Garoppolo made a play like that, post that Jimmy Garoppolo play over and over and tell us how bad Jimmy Garoppolo sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, that's fine, but now keep that same energy.
Yeah.
And stop holding on to your perception of what you thought Trevor Lawrence was in 2021 and after 2022. Because it is really, really clear that Trevor Lawrence is not that guy.
Yeah.
We'll keep talking about it. I got plenty more to say about Monday Night Football. We'll dive into that, including something that insane that was said about Monday Night Football last night on this very radio station. Just completely outrageous. I want to get to that. I rewatched the Niner game, and I want to have a little bit different discussion about Ronnie Bell. Do the 49ers need to make a trade? That's a great question you brought up. We'll talk about that. And I'm going to the Coliseum today for the last time. We'll get to that as well. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320. We're hanging out with you till noon on Sacramento Sports Center.
Go.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
The Seahawks are 3-0, just like we all expected. The Minnesota Vikings, 3-0. Hey, James, just like we all expected.
That's why I loaded up on Minnesota Vikings receivers, because I knew Sam Darnold would be this guy.
Who didn't? Every year, there's some surprise team that's good after 3 weeks. Post the standings. Oh, just like we all expected, this bad team. Like, all right. We got just post the standings. We don't need the lame joke, too. Anyways. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube is the sponsor of the program. I want to get to something. I want to continue our discussion of Monday Night Football. We have plenty more 49ers stuff coming up, and a little bit of Raiders news as well coming down from NFL Network last night. But I want to continue this quarterback conversation. We're talking about Trevor Lawrence, and it feels like last night was a lot about quarterback play, because you had Trevor Lawrence, who was bad. You had Josh Allen, who looked like the MVP of the league. You had Jaden Daniels, the rookie for the Washington Commanders, playing not only his best game as a pro, but just flat out one of the best games we've seen by a quarterback in the league this year. He was sensational. A thing I did not expect coming out of today, or coming out of last night, was blame being thrown at Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. For the Bengals' 38-33 loss to the Washington Commanders last night. Chris Canty on this very radio station. He's on in the mornings from 6 to 9, I believe. He said that Joe Burrow let himself and his offense and his team down with his performance in last night's game. If you missed it, let me refresh you on what Joe Burrow did in last night's game, because you're probably thinking, wow, that's pretty harsh. Joe Burrow must have stunk it up. Here's what he stunk it up to the tune of. 29 completions on 38 attempts. That's a 76.3% completion rate. He went for 8.5 yards per attempt, 324 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Team scored 33 points. And their defense got cooked by Jaden Daniels, who was 21 of 23. That's 91.3% completion rate. He went 11 yards per attempt, which is insane. Two touchdowns, no interceptions. He also ran it 12 times for 39 yards and a touchdown. If your takeaway from that game last night is, wow, Joe Burrow's just got to do more. That's lunacy.
That's tough, man. I don't get that at all. I mean, we watched, there are two games, four quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence was by far the worst.
By a lot, a ton.
And Joe Burrow might have been the best pure quarterback of the night. Like, Josh Allen won big, right? Mm-hmm. But he also played against Trevor Lawrence, so we got to give a little bit of leeway here. But, like, the performance that Burrow put up was phenomenal.
It was awesome.
But, on the other hand, I'm here for the Chase Daniels, like...
Jaden Daniels.
My bad. I'm here for Jaden Daniels, like, to be... Like, he is so good, like, right away.
That touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin last night was silly stuff.
Again, it's one of those passes that drop from the sky where no one else can get to that
pressure
pass.
In his face.
Oh, yeah.
Threw it while McLaurin was still covered up. Just threw him open. Sensational.
Well, I think the biggest part about that is he has figured out how to use Terry McLaurin. Because the first week was not good, and he couldn't figure it out. And then all of a sudden you're seeing him... slowly starting to settle in as a quarterback. He plays with a tempo and a speed at all times.
Yeah.
Everything he does is decisive.
Yeah.
You know, there are people in this world that are decisive people that they go out and you can see right away. It's like, hey, we got to go build something, or hey, we got to get this job done. It's like there are some people who stand around like, okay, well, I don't know really what to do here. And there are other people who just dive in and start doing it, right? Daniels is that guy. Just like straight up. He just, everything he does feels like he knows exactly where he wants to go. And he might make mistakes.
Yeah.
And he's not going to, you know, take that team to the Super Bowl in year one.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a winner right there.
Last night was so encouraging on that front. Against a Bengals defense, by the way, that regularly gives like Patrick Mahomes fits.
Yeah.
And he just cooks. Lou Anarumo is their defensive coordinator. He's one of the, you talk about people who analyze and watch football, they love Lou Anarumo. Oh, look how creative he is. Look how awesome. And Jaden Daniels, just no problem last night.
Nope. No.
But I saw this. It's insane to me that in a sport like football, we're going to walk away from that game and have smart people. Chris Canty. I like Chris Canty very much.
Mm-hmm.
Blaming Joe Burrow? Shannon Sharpe did it too on First Take, which I don't take seriously. But Shannon Sharpe was like, well, it's because Tom Brady would have known early on what type of game that was, and he would have gotten touchdowns instead of field goals in the second quarter. Take that take directly to hell. Like, punt that to whatever level of hell it belongs on.
That's dumb.
It's dreadful, dude. Like, that is such bad analysis, and so it's so just short-sighted. And I know it's born out of, they're on First Take. They can't go talk about Lou Anarumo in the defense because that's not something that appeals to the widest swath of the audience, right?
No.
You want to talk about the quarterback. If you're going to talk about the quarterback and you're talking about the Bengals losing, you now need to put the loss on the quarterback. Like, that's where that's born out of. And it's so, so frustrating that it is such a quarterback-centric league now. They walk away from a game where very clearly the story is, hey, the Bengals are 0-3, and they couldn't get a stop against a rookie quarterback in his third start.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get one stop.
The whole game.
Washington never punted last night. Washington's last night, touchdown, 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 a kneel down to end the half, a touchdown in their lone third quarter possession, field goal, touchdown, end of game where they kneeled.
I think
that's the story. The Bengals are in trouble because their defense can't get a freaking stop, dude.
Yes. Was there a single punt?
No.
There wasn't a single punt, and there wasn't a single turnover in the game.
The only possessions that didn't end in a score were the end of the half, the end of the game, and a Bengals missed field goal.
Mm.
The only possessions that didn't end in scores.
I don't know. I certainly think, like, the Bengals, I don't even feel like they're in trouble. I just think that they like to start slow every year. You know, you always have those guys coming out of spring training that can't hit for the first month of the season, and then you get into May and they're just cooking.
Yeah.
They feel like they're that team, but, like, the Commanders, you're just very much intrigued by what's happening. And I don't know how good they're going to be when it's all said and done this season,
mm-hmm.
but they're on to something. And for me, I'm here for it. That's an intriguing start to a year. And just the way that he's coming out and playing as a rookie, the way that he's leading as a rookie, the way that he really has a grasp of everything. Like, he's yelling at his coach, we got to go for it on 4th and 1.
Love it.
And like a crucial moment mm-hmm. late in the game where if they don't get that first down,
yeah,
I mean, they're cooked.
Mm-hmm.
No, he wanted all that smoke. Like, super, super encouraging for the Commanders.
So Jaden Daniels and the Commanders are 2-1. Interesting game at the Cardinals this weekend.
Mm.
At Arizona on Sunday. Then they're home against the Browns in a division game. At Baltimore in a division game. Home Carolina, home Bears, at the Giants. That's the first half of their season.
Okay.
After 9 weeks, they could really easily be like 6-3.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't think that's outrageous. So I'm really excited to see what Jaden Daniels and Commanders do. And to your point about the Bengals and their slow starts, they're at Carolina next week, home Ravens, at Giants, at Browns, home Eagles, home Raiders. Like, if you told me they wound up 5-4 after the first 9 weeks, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
Nope.
So they could definitely bounce back. But right now, man, they lose to the Patriots in week 1. They just looked abominable. They go to Kansas City and they have a tough loss there last week.
Yep.
And then they come home and their defense just gets mollywopped by Washington, man.
Just very, very concerning how poorly their defense played. Yeah. But they had a lot of like things to be positive about. I thought that, you know, again, they had Ja'Marr Chase finally looked like Ja'Marr Chase. Mm-hmm. I thought that Chase Brown ran crazy hard.
Yeah, he was
like,
good.
Yeah, I think he was a guy that you're kind of circling saying, okay, when is that guy getting more carries? Just overall, I think even getting T. Higgins back and actually having him make a couple of plays,
mm-hmm.
all right. Like, that team has a ton of talent. It's just, when are they going to put it together?
Yeah.
And it's probably week 4 that they're going to put it together.
You'd think so, but maybe they get cooked by Andy Dalton.
Well,
we have seen it happen before.
The Red Rocket, you never know.
Speaking of the Panthers and the Las Vegas Raiders, the NFL media's Ian Rappaport reported last night that Gardner Minshew will remain the Raiders' starting quarterback, not Aiden O'Connell, despite O'Connell's performance at the end of Sunday's game against the Panthers. Gardner Minshew is going to be the starter moving forward. I think that's probably the right move. Mm-hmm. I saw John Poles in the Chatty House say that week 4 was when he predicted the change would come. So Gardner's got one more week. And then he's out of there.
Well, but if they go 2-2,
that's the right move. You can't pull the plug after 3 games.
Yeah,
especially when Gardner Minshew was so instrumental to that win against the Ravens in Baltimore, and so instrumental to that comeback. I think it just sends such a bad message, because I know, okay, losing to the Panthers is a bad look for the Raiders. Not just losing, but getting housed the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. But at the same time, you're 1-2. You can still salvage this thing if you're Antonio Pierce, where, okay, you're not looking to win 13 games, but you're looking to win 9, maybe 10, maybe stick around on the playoff hunt and just kind of show growth over last year. So I think that's the right move for right now, is not making any dramatic changes. But if you go lose again this week, or you're just yuck again this week, I think at that point you start looking at the quarterback.
Yeah, it's you're going to get to a point where you need to make sure you know what O'Connell is.
Yeah.
And if you can figure that out, I don't think you need 10 weeks or 12 weeks to figure that out.
Yeah.
I think you probably need 8.
Yeah.
So I would like to see if Minshew has them hanging around still.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does, then you keep going to the well. But that team looks like a 500 team.
Yeah.
Right, it looks like a team right around 8-9 or 9-8, right around 500.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they're going to win 1 week and they're going to lose 1 week. And mm-hmm. some weeks you're going to get super excited about who you think they are, and other weeks you're going to be very disappointed when they lose to the worst team in football.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just going to be who they are.
Yeah, I think if you lose at home against the Browns this week and you kind of look as bad as you did against Carolina, mm-hmm. I think at that point you got to change something. Because at that point, now you run the risk of losing guys in the locker room, and you run the risk of, instead of being that 8-9, 9-8, you're looking at 5-12.
Yeah, that's tough.
And that's not where you want to get. So Gardner Minshew, though, going to start this weekend for the Raiders against the Browns. 1:25 p.m. first kick. You can hear that game right here on ESPN 1320. All right, first kick. What is that? First kickoff is at 1:25.
The first kick.
First pitch. Speaking of first pitch, Mets at Braves tonight. First pitch, 4:20. Coverage begins 4 o'clock. Right here on ESPN 1320. It's basically a playoff series between the Mets and Braves. Tap in.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got October baseball in September.
It's the East Coast A's. Against what used to be the East Coast A's. I mean, what is it? Matt Olson and...
Sean Murphy.
Yeah, Sean Murphy.
Is Starling Marte still with the Mets?
I believe so.
I don't think Chris Bassett is there anymore. Mark Canha is definitely not there anymore.
Nope.
I know Jerry Blevins pitched for the Mets for a minute.
I think he did. Yeah.
All right. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube is the sponsor of this program, which is called The Insiders. Thank you so much for hanging out with us, whether you're on ESPN 1320 on your radio dial, maybe you're hanging out on the free Odyssey app, or maybe you're in the chatty house at youtube.com/ESPN1320 or twitch.tv/ESPN1320. We appreciate everybody watching there and interacting with us there as well. Call the Elk Grove Kia Talk Line, 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320, if you want to chime in on the conversation. Let's get, while we're here talking Monday Night Football and talking which teams are good and bad, we did this a little bit last year, and it was a fun exercise because it felt like we were doing top five teams, and it felt like there were seven teams that were really jockeying to be in that spot throughout the year. I'm looking at the standings this year, and I'm not really sure where I land on who the five best teams in the league are. I think at the top for me, I should have gotten a pen. I'm going to get a pen while you're talking. Kansas City's got to be at the top, right?
I don't know. Like, their wins just aren't convincing. They're not playing that well. They just seem to figure out a way to win.
And this is where it's tough for me, because look, objectively, like, Minnesota's been the best team in the league, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's throw Minnesota at the top.
Okay.
Minnesota's 3-0. They beat the heck out of the Texans last week. They stuck it to the Niners in week 2, and what, they kicked the crap out of the Giants in week 1, I think.
Yeah.
So Minnesota this year has been the best team in the league.
I think so.
Okay.
Yep.
Here's where the Kansas City thing gets tough for me. Are you putting Buffalo above them?
I think I am.
Buffalo is a net plus 64. Kansas City is plus 13 in point differential.
Yeah. But
Josh Allen looks like the MVP of the league right now. Patrick Mahomes struggling a little bit. You putting Buffalo too?
I am.
The reason I struggle with the Chiefs thing is because, objectively, Minnesota's been better this year. Buffalo's been better this year. But I don't know that I'm picking anybody except Kansas City to win the Super Bowl right now.
No, I agree. But if we're doing power rankings versus who's going to win the Super Bowl, I think it's different. So power ranking-wise, I think we're right so far.
Minnesota won, Buffalo too?
Minnesota won, Buffalo too.
Okay, here are the other 3-0 teams. There's Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and Seattle.
Okay, so
did Pittsburgh or Seattle land in the top five for you, even though they're 3-0?
Pittsburgh or no.
No?
No.
Okay. I think I'm with you. Even though they're 3-0, Seattle's done nothing super impressive to me yet. What's Seattle's schedule look like? Let me get on this real quick.
Yeah, they're
at Detroit. Okay, they're at Detroit this week on Monday Night Football.
They won't be 3-0 after this. They won't be 4-0 this week.
If they are, I'm in. If they are, I will fully buy into Seattle.
Okay.
Even if they play really well in Detroit and lose, I'll buy into Seattle. But this is the first, like, real test for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not buying into Seattle just yet. I'm not buying into Pittsburgh just yet. Does Kansas City go 3 for you?
Yes. Kansas City's 3.
Other options are Houston. You got New Orleans, Washington, Tampa Bay.
But Houston looked horrible this weekend. Houston didn't play well at all.
No, they sure didn't. Yeah, I've got to go Kansas City 3. Because at some point when every team is just kind of sitting here at 2-1, I've got to go track record a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm going with the Chiefs at number 3 behind Minnesota and Buffalo, and I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, that's fun.
Okay.
I don't want to put the Saints up there. They're a plus 59.
Man.
But it was like so much smoke and mirror in the first 2 weeks.
And can you put the Saints above Philly, who just beat the Saints in New Orleans?
No, I'm putting Philly. I think Philly at this point is number 4.
Philly at number 4. Wow, okay.
I don't know. I'm not super convinced, but like I think they've...
But that's okay, and that's perfect, you saying that. Because that's exactly when I was... So the reason I didn't... Usually when we do this, I write down the top 5 in the rundown. So we can go through and we don't have to go through the rigmarole of actually picking on the air.
Yeah.
We'll fake like, okay, who do you want to do next? But it's actually there, right? It's theater of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just pulling the curtain back. We have this discussion just kind of beforehand. But I genuinely had no idea because I don't know which of these teams is any good. We can put Philly at 4, sure. But am I slam dunk absolutely convinced that Philly is better than Tampa Bay? No.
Nope.
Am I absolutely 100% convinced that they're better than Washington? No.
Mm-mm.
Not this year. Not right now. Am I absolutely convinced that they're better than Houston or the Jets? No.
No.
And that's where I think this is so difficult. And that's why this is such a fun conversation for me. You have Philly 4. I would probably put Houston 4 because Houston didn't play well against Minnesota, but I thought Houston looked really good through the first 2 weeks.
No, I thought they did too, but they didn't look solid at all this last week.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested with Houston to see how they bounce back.
Yeah.
What do they have this week? So Houston beat Indy by a couple points. They beat the Bears. They get smoked by Minnesota. Now they get Jacksonville. Oh, the Bills in week 5.
Oh.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
That'll be really fun. I'm going to put Houston at 5. We can have Philly 4 right now. That's fine.
Okay.
But like Detroit could go there. Tampa Bay could go there. Tampa Bay looked really good the first 2 weeks. It didn't look great this week.
I'm kind of feeling the Lions.
How come?
Yeah, I just feel like that they're a team that has a ton of talent. They've had, you know, not the most difficult schedule, but, you know, I think we now know that, you know, the Rams are probably better than what their record was.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks are a solid team. They lost 20-16. And I think the Cardinals, you know, winning 20-13, the Cardinals are a gritty team.
Yeah, Cardinals are good. I think Jonathan Gannon's doing a good job there.
Yeah.
Watch out for the Cardinals in the NFC West. Like you said, the Lions went down and beat them 20-13 in Arizona. The Lions now get Seattle this week. We talked about that, and then they go into their bye week. I'm with you. I think the Lions play a style of football that is akin to the 49ers.
Yeah.
Just in terms of, man, weather starts to get cold and these games start to matter. The Lions' ability to just grind you into dust in the run game and their ability to get after the passer on defense, that's just going to win them some games on the stretch.
No, I totally agree. And their ability to hit like the intermediate pass, you know, mm-hmm. I think having Laporta, if he's healthy, mm-hmm. I mean, he's banged up right now, but they said low ankle sprain.
Yeah.
I think that's big, but Amon-Ra St. Brown is really, awesome really player. Good. And he's not just like a burner. He's a guy, he's a little bit more like Davante Adams who does everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like him and sort of what he means. And then I love their backfield. You know,
yeah.
Like Montgomery's really good, and so is Jahmyr Gibbs,
mm-hmm.
and they give you something different. Like both of them are very, very good. I think that's a well designed team,
yep.
And a well coached team at this point, mm-hmm. and so that's a team that I think is going to be there.
I'm right there with you.
You know, again, I'm not in on the Jets.
Detroit is the team that's not in the top 5 currently for us. That I think will be there and be a mainstay pretty soon.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm a full believer in Detroit, but through 3 weeks, we've got Minnesota, Buffalo, KC, Philly, and Houston. We will keep track of this as the year goes on. Now that we got a few games under our belts to see what these teams are bringing, but I'm still not totally convinced who's good and who's not. Hey, did you know the 49ers are 15th out of 16 in the NFC right now?
Ooh.
Yeah, because they're 0-2 in their conference games.
Well, see, that's not good.
That's not a great look for the
49ers. And they're a plus 4 in point differential.
Yeah.
That's crazy at 1-2.
Carolina is minus 46. Carolina won by how many against the Raiders this weekend? 16? 12?
Something like
14.
That.
14 points. And they're still a minus 46.
That's yeah, wild. That was wild.
Tough loss for the Raiders. All right. I rewatched the Niner game. And I want to revisit something we talked about with Ronnie Bell yesterday. And I want to talk about something that Kyle Shanahan said. We talked about Jacob Cowing a lot yesterday. And Kyle Shanahan was asked about Jacob Cowing in his conference call.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't sound super promising for the 49ers rookie. And I'm a little bit concerned that we might be seeing more Ronnie Bell again this week.
Ooh.
We'll talk about what Kyle Shanahan had to say next. Do the 49ers need to make a trade? And I'm going to the Coliseum tonight for the last time to watch the Oakland Athletics. We will talk about that as well. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Another hour coming up of The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two.
We're back.
I'm Kyle Madsen. He's James Hamm. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. We're taking you up till noon. Then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and Casey, and they'll take you to 4 o'clock. They'll take you right up to Mets at Braves. It's a wild card. Basically, it's a playoff series.
Yeah.
Happening in Atlanta. Going to be super fun. I believe it's Luis Severino against Spencer Schwellenbach.
That's a name.
For the Braves, yeah. So it should be a fun one right here on ESPN 1320. But we got a second hour to get to. We'll get to D'Lo and KC, of course, as well. sorry, I'm flustered. Leezy's back on the prize picks.
That's not good. Hey, I did look up. So the Mets still have, they have Jake Diekman.
Oh, yeah. A's legend, yep.
They have Sean Manaea.
A's legend, yep. A's and Giants legend.
They did trade for Paul Blackburn during the season.
Oh, that's right.
He's on the 15-day. 925
legend.
Yeah, so they have plenty of former A's on this roster. And, of course, Starling Marte. I did not look at the Braves to see who exactly is a former A there. But, of course, Matt Olson. And, Sean Murphy's had a bad season. Really bad season for them. But they also have Ramon Laureano.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, Grant Holmes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's kind of like a toss-up, right? Who's got the most former A's?
Oh my, Chadwick Trump, Giants legend.
Oh,
is with the Braves, although he's in the minors right now, per their 40-man roster.
Wait a sec. Do the Braves? Is this for real? Is Jesse Chavez still playing?
Yes, yes.
What?
That's absolutely real. Shout out to Jesse Chavez.
41 years old, still yeah. Slinging it.
Yeah, dog.
A's legend, Jesse Chavez.
Hell yeah, love it for him.
Goodness, he's pitched forever.
Yeah. Yep. 41.
Wow.
Turned 41 this year. Having a decent year, too.
Yeah, I wonder how many teams he played for in his career. That's a lot.
Pittsburgh, got Atlanta, Kansas City, Oakland, Toronto, Dodgers, Angels, Rangers, Cubs. Back to the Rangers, back to the Braves, back to the Cubs, back to the Angels, back to the Braves.
I think he's played for 10 different teams, but he's played for the Cubs multiple times, the Braves multiple times, the Angels multiple times. Wow.
What a career. Shout out to Jesse Chavez, and shout out to Mets Braves, 4 p.m. today on ESPN 1320.
Yep.
Sacramento's sports leader. All right, so we talked about Ronnie Bell quite a bit yesterday, of course, after he had a massive drop in the 49ers loss to the Rams on Sunday. I went back and watched, and, you know, I didn't think that he did anything on that play that felt like, I don't think he did anything like super wrong. I think he just dropped it. Because I was with you yesterday when it felt like, man, he did way too much on that. Like he tried to jump and twist and catch and oh my God. But just, I think it's just what he had to do on that throw.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Defender's on his back. He turns inside. The ball is there. He had to jump forward a little bit, but like his leg kicks up and it looked weird. It hit him in the chest though.
Yeah.
It was imminently catchable. When I went back and watched it, I went, okay, I wonder if this is going to look like, because in the moment, it's like, dude, you got to grab that.
Yep.
And then I'm writing and we're talking in the studio and stuff. And so it didn't really get a good grasp. So I wanted to go back and look at it again. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to walk away from this thinking that it wasn't as bad of a drop as I remember. No, it was bad.
It was bad.
Hit him right in the stomach. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a good throw. He was in front of the corner. He was in front of the safety. Easy completion.
He wasn't getting hit?
It wasn't like defender had arm draped on him. Like, nope. Defender was there. Defender was near him, mm-hmm. for sure. But if you need a defender to be 8 yards away to make a catch in the NFL, you don't belong in the NFL. Goodbye. It was a catchable. So that was my big takeaway is good throw. He did everything right except, like, secure the football.
Watch the ball into his hands.
Which is his problem earlier on his first drop. Where he's on a slant and you see his head pop up because the linebacker's coming across and he short arms it.
Yeah.
It was not great. A tough look for Ronnie Bell. I was really trying to see something that was going to get me on air today to go, hey, you know what? Not as bad as we thought. No, it was.
No, it was.
it was dreadful.
Yeah. I watched it quite a few times early on.
It was not great for our guy. All right. So we talked about Jacob Cowing yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't Jacob Cowing playing? Kyle Shanahan got asked this in his presser, or not his presser, but his conference call yesterday. And shout out to Jennifer Lee Chan from NBC Sports Bay Area, who really tried to get like an exact answer here.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the first question. Where's Jacob Cowing on his, I guess, progression in getting involved in the offense? And were there thoughts about getting him any more snaps on offense? Kyle Shanahan said he's still working to get out there.
Mm.
He is trying to get more comfortable with the offense and just earn a role with it. Gets closer and closer each week. Still got a bit to go, though. How do you hear that?
I don't like this because I feel like Shanahan is always very harsh on young receivers.
Mm.
And it does not work out most of the time. Like, Ayuk is the one that survived like a big downswing with him and came mm-hmm. back. But just think of all the other guys that just haven't made it. So I don't know what they're doing there where they're not being able to get a wide receiver to progress to the point where he can actually walk on the field and actually play. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the problem is. Zone blocking? Is there something else that they have to do that makes it complicated? Because, you know, 10 years ago, rookie wide receivers came into the league and they all caught for like 550 to 600 yards and three touchdowns.
You know exactly what you were getting.
And every once in a while, there's a guy who popped off for like 850 yards and everyone was like, oh my gosh, he's going to be so good.
Yep.
And then by year three, they're really good. I feel like the Niners still live in that world where the modern, like, first-year wide receiver walks into the league and, like, Puka Nacua was unbelievable last year. Justin Jefferson, unbelievable as a rookie. We're watching Marvin Harrison Jr., like, he's spectacular. And you can say, well, those are top-tier guys, whatever.
Sure.
It's like, no. There's been, for years, there have been top-tier guys
mm-hmm.
that completely bust as wide receivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, even, Jameson Williams, he's trying to shake the bust right mm-hmm. now, like, that whole, you know, whether he is a bust or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's doing a good job of, like, showing, hey, look, whatever happened. And what's the kid for the Chargers? Johnson.
Quentin Johnston?
Yeah, where rookie season he was atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he's got, what, three touchdowns or something mm-hmm. in the first two, starting to figure first it out. 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. He is starting to figure out. And that used to be the natural progression of receivers. Mm-hmm. It feels like with the 49ers, they get so many, they go out and they get these speed guys, and then they cannot figure out how to either have them progress mm-hmm. or they just never have any faith and want to put him on the field. Sometimes you just got to put a dude out there.
That, I could not agree more. What is so... I would love to know, and Deebo Samuel's talked about this. Kyle Shanahan's really hard on young receivers.
Yep.
And part of it is because of how precise you need to be. But at the same time, is that half yard that Jacob Cowing is lining up off, is that half yard going to make that much of a difference? like, in all seriousness, is that half yard going to be the difference between the 49ers winning a game and the 49ers losing a game based on where Jacob Cowing lines up? Mm. Because you've got in the Super Bowl, you've got Kadarius Toney for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl against the Eagles 2 years ago. You've got him lining up in the wrong spot and still catching a touchdown on a play.
Mm.
Because the Patrick Mahomes and the offense just figured it out.
Yeah.
Why can the 49ers not do that? Why does their offense have to be such that if Jacob Cowing is lined up at the 40 and a half yard line instead of the 40 yard line, why is that a problem? And I guess that doesn't work because we're talking horizontally, not vertically. But you get what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's that he can't get on the field for 10 plays?
Well, see, Kyle,
I don't get it.
This is where I have a problem. It's that a guy like Xavier Worthy, right, for the Chiefs,
mm-hmm.
like, yeah, he's raw. Like, there are all kinds of things he's doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell. But week yep. one, he blows up. He has, you know,
two touchdowns.
He has a rushing touchdown. He has a receiving touchdown. Mm-hmm. That's the electricity that a player like that brings.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got to deal with the like, things that they can't do.
Yeah.
In order to maximize the things they can do.
Yes.
And just if he runs, and Brock Purdy never throws it to him, but if he runs past everybody
mm-hmm.
three plays in a row, the defense changes.
Yes.
Because everyone in the entire building is like, oh man, if he actually throws it to him in that play, it's going to be crazy, right? So I think there's a big difference between a guy who runs a 4.6, 4.7, 40 as a wide receiver and mm-hmm. just what it takes, how much he has to be perfect on every single thing he does. Mm-hmm. Juwan Jennings, everything he does in order to create separation has to be perfect.
Exactly.
He's got to use his body to block somebody out. He's got to be able to go up and over the top of players.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not who Cowings is. He's a dude, just put him out there, do the end around,
mm-hmm.
put him out there, do a wide receiver screen once or twice, put him out there and have him just run as fast as he can.
Yeah.
Don't do anything else. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, hey, like get him in there doing some zone blocking and see what happens. I'm not
sure.
I don't want him doing a quick slant.
Mm-hmm.
But you put that guy out there and you at least try to break things up a little bit, because look, we've already seen what Ronnie Bell does. Like there's no way that Cowings is any worse. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest.
That's kind of where I get with this. If Ronnie Bell was just a little bit slow, but man, you know what? In this case, I guess it would be Juwan Jennings. It's like, man, he does everything right.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? He's just not going to take the top off of defense, but that's fine. Then I totally get it. But if he has problems holding on to the football, which he did last year, he had those problems in the preseason this year, he had a drop earlier in the game on Sunday. I don't understand how the benefit of, hey, he knows where to line up, and he can block, so we might be able to run it when he's on the field and the defense has to account for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is more important than catching the damn ball.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. So it didn't make any sense to Jennifer Lee Chan either. And she pressed Kyle Shanahan on this. She said, how has he been looking? He's obviously back, not off the injury list. But does he look, I should say not on the injury list. But does he look like he is normal health-wise other than that? Kyle Shanahan said, oh yeah, he's totally healthy. Okay. So she said, is it more mental understanding of the offense and where he needs to be? And Kyle Shanahan reiterates, there's a lot of reasons that go into it, but he hasn't been able to make his way into that group yet. And the more he gets comfortable with the offense and the more consistent he gets, then he'll earn those opportunities. I'm over this.
Mm.
I'm so over this. I have an immense respect for Kyle Shanahan and his knowledge of football and the fact that the reason his offenses are so good is because he has such an in-depth understanding of defenses and this and that. 1,000%. But every other good coach that we talk about finds out ways to get their rookie wide receivers on the field. I'm not asking Jacob Cowing, and this is what you were getting at. I'm not asking Jacob Cowing to be Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm not asking him to be Malik Nabers.
No.
But can he get on the field a little? Can I get 10 snaps from Jacob Cowing where it's second and three, and hey, the whole playbook's open, so we're going to put this guy out there, and hey, if it doesn't work, then we have a third and short.
Yeah.
Like, do...
Can he be Rashid Shaheed? That's what... Like,
sure.
Can he be Worthy? Mm-hmm. Can he be just a guy who's out there for a couple plays? Teddy Ginn. Can he be someone who's just out there to run fast and stretch the defense? Every once in a while, he's going to catch a crazy bomb, and everyone's going to be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But the other times, just the fear of him has value. Mm-hmm. It does. And so, I don't know.
Maybe Kyle Shanahan didn't want to throw him under the bus. Maybe drops have been a problem for him in practice, too.
Yeah.
But it feels like that's just something you would just say. Like, yeah, he's struggling to hang on to the football.
Yeah, and maybe he's just, like, you get him in your building and you realize that he doesn't have the football IQ to be a player. Like, he doesn't understand when to cut, when to not, when to put on the jets and when not. But it sort of seemed like he was okay coming into the league, and I don't know.
Then why is he on the team?
Yeah.
And so Tyler Jennings said, why not be a coach and coach him to play? That's kind of it.
Yeah.
How are you not adapting your scheme if it's so impossible for rookie wide receivers? How are you not adapting your scheme a little bit just to get those players on the field? If it matters so much to get playmakers, guys with the ball in the hands, we prioritize the guys who score touchdowns. All right, that's fine. But then make it so your offense isn't apparently freaking impossible. I understand Jacob Cowing had a truncated preseason and a truncated training camp. I'm fully on board. I totally got it. But it is baffling to me that we're here in week three. And it's, well, until he gets comfortable in the offense, he's not going to get opportunities. All right, keep throwing it to Ronnie Bell then.
Yeah,
keep running him out there.
It's crazy because we're looking at a kid who, you know, as a junior caught 69 passes for 1,354 yards and 7 touchdowns at UTEP. The next year he had for Arizona, and he had 85 catches for 1,034 yards and 7 touchdowns. Finishes his college career with a COVID season, 848 yards, 90 catches, and 13 touchdowns. Like, this isn't just a run as fast as you can guy.
Mm-mm.
This is a guy who's, like, literally put together a career.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not, you know, 1 year he averaged 19.6 yards per catch, but the next year was 12.2 and 9.4. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a guy who can get out into a pass, like, into a pattern and actually make a play.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't figure out how to dumb it down a little bit for him...
Baffling.
And that's where, like to relate this to, like, the Sacramento Kings.
Sure.
It's okay to have a bunch of system players and then one or two system busters. That's okay. Because, like, it's the Bobby Jackson theory, right? You have everybody doing this incredible Princeton offense. The cuts, the passing of the big men is something no one had seen.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything is beautiful. The high level, the basketball IQ of every single one of those players was so high.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a guy like Bobby Jackson who just came out in streetball, just played his game. He played within the system sometimes. Other times he didn't. And it's kind of like what Malik Monk does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's okay to have those guys because they cause chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And they break up the monotony of what you're doing. And so to not be able to find a way to get one of those guys onto the football field at all,
mm-hmm.
like... If you're not comfortable with a lot of what he's doing, then put him in the backfield. You know, like, hand the ball off to him just to get the ball in his hands. If you can't teach him how to take a handoff, I guarantee you he's taken a bajillion handoffs, whether it was in high school or as a college player, just like sitting there taking handoffs. Like, figure out a way, if you have a weapon and your team is lacking weapons at the time, to go get that explosive play. Yeah. And maybe it doesn't work out, but there's also a possibility that kid standing in the end zone on an 80-yard touchdown and everyone in the building's like, oh my gosh, did you see how fast he is?
Yeah.
I'd at least like to try it here and there.
With you, man.
Especially while you're down, you know, three gigantic playmakers and your star tight end, your jack-of-all-trades wide receiver, and your superstar running back. Mm-hmm. Okay? You gotta figure out ways to use what you got, man.
Gotta do something.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm glad you brought up the Sacramento Kings, because I want to shift gears to the NBA real briefly here. This just caught my eye this morning, and it shouldn't have blown my mind, but it did.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi Leonard had his intro presser with the Toronto Raptors 6 years ago today.
It's wild.
That was so long ago. So many things have happened in the NBA since Kawhi Leonard went to the Raptors. It's crazy how quickly that went from Kawhi goes to Toronto, they win the finals, they beat the Warriors in the finals in 2019,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, wow, Kawhi wins a finals MVP with the Spurs and wins a ring, goes to a different team and wins a ring as a finals MVP. Now he's going to go to the Clippers. And oh my God, is he going to win a ring and a finals MVP with a third team and bring another championship to a team that doesn't have one? And the way the wheels have fallen off since then, I'm so interested in how we're going to assess Kawhi Leonard over the next decade.
Yeah, he's probably going to be one of the most difficult players to assess as far as like the grand scheme of their career, because the numbers, yeah, like points per game, his averages and stuff will be fine, mm-hmm. but the overall numbers won't be. The overall like volume of scoring for his career, his overall rebounds or steals or anything else, they're not going to be off the charts because of his inability to stay on the court like the last, realistically, it's 7 years of his career,
mm-hmm.
right?
He played 68 games this year. That was the most games he'd played in a season since 2016-17.
That's wild. 16-17.
So long ago.
To put that in perspective, De'Aaron Fox came in the league the next year.
He hasn't played 70 games since De'Aaron Fox got into the league.
That's wild.
It's ridiculous.
And like, look, as someone who covered that series, the mm-hmm. you know, the finals, yeah. I was in Toronto. They sent me there twice
mm-hmm.
To cover the finals, and it was spectacular, right?
Oh God, I bet.
Yeah, Toronto's an amazing city. Shout out to Toronto. The people, mm-hmm. the people were cool. Actually, the fans were really rude to media inside the building, which was really awkward and weird. Plus, we also had the situation where Kevin Durant popped his Achilles on the court, and Kyle Lowry had to like take the mic and yell at the fans.
Yeah.
But overall, like the experience was amazing. Like there was a father and son that lined up 3 days early and just sat out front of the line, waiting to get in, not to the building, into Jurassic Park, which
Good
was outside.
Lord.
They were there for 3 days, and mm-hmm. super cool experience, father and son.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. At the last second, the Raptors came out and gave the father and son tickets to inside the game.
Incredible.
Wild, right? So watching all of it play out, though, it just feels like another lifetime ago. And I was in the locker room twice at a game 7 in Oakland, once when the Cavs won, once when the Warriors won.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have been back in Toronto. Like the way that works is we all had our plane tickets lined mm-hmm. up for them to go back. And then what, Clay got hurt in the game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they sure did.
We had to cancel our flights. We're waiting for the game to end. And then you have to get on and cancel your flight super quick in order to make sure it's 24 hours in advance, because we would have had to fly out the next morning because Toronto is such a brutal flight to get to. So I didn't go to game, it was game 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Oakland.
In Oakland, yeah.
Because I had been traveling nonstop that whole time, and they're like, hey, you just get ready and get ready to be on a plane the next morning because mm-hmm. we're going to have you back up in Toronto. It was wild to be part of all that.
Yeah.
And that was, it feels like it was so long ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's crazy.
That's wild.
Crazy. Yeah, shout out to Kawhi Leonard. Just nuts that feels like it feels like yesterday, but also, like I said, so much time has passed since then, and I'm interested to see how Kawhi's legacy kind of shakes out. Obvious Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Gonna kind of go down as an all-timer, but it's gonna feel like wherever he lands in the all-time pantheon, it's going to feel short of what we thought after that 2019 season.
Yeah, I would have a tough time putting him in the top 100. Like if the NBA does their you know, another version of the top 75 or top 100, I don't think.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. I mean, like,
come on.
Realistically, look at the games played. Like of all time? No. Like,
I'm gonna hard disagree there.
It's tough.
He's been so freaking good. He's played 696 games, and he's been unbelievable.
But 696 games in what, 13 years?
Yeah. Yeah, missed the whole season with an ACL.
Yeah.
In 21-22, yeah.
That's tough, man.
Second team All-NBA last year still? I
don't
know. Quiet.
I don't know where I put him.
Hell of a player. All right, we got to hit a break. Oh, geez, we're going to be late. We got a huge break coming up. All right, so we got to hit a break. I'm going to the Coliseum for the last time today. Let's talk about it next on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hey, welcome back in. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and Casey. The handoff actually coming up in about 15 minutes. I think it's a KC day today. You here? I saw KC. Hey, he's back today.
I think. I don't know.
I hope so. Either way, one of D'Lo or KC will be in about 15 minutes right here on the Insiders. All right. I don't really have a plan for this, to be totally honest. I'm going to my last A's game at the Coliseum today.
Okay.
And I tried to like write something down and I couldn't. So I'm just going to talk about it on the radio because that's kind of what I do. And I'm going to hope to get to some kind of conclusion.
Okay.
It's weird, man. It's a really weird thing. And I think it's made especially so by the fact that they're going to be in Sacramento next year and we're going to cover the heck out of them and we'll do a great job doing so. But at the same time, I was kind of thinking about it last night, and it's just like it's obviously different because of how things kind of wound up with the team's locations. But I think it's in the realm of what people felt like when they tore Arco down. Like, again, it's different because the Kings are still here and they're at Golden 1 and they have this beautiful new arena and stuff. But there's that factor of like, this is a place where so many people grew up, or this is a place where so many people, like the first thing I think about, dead air, can't have it. The first thing I think about is just like, I tried practicing this, so I wouldn't do this. It's just like the people that you get to spend time with there.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks.
Yeah. I'll say this, Kyle. Take over for a sec while you
yeah, please.
Yeah, while you
thank
think.
You.
My first baseball game I ever went to, my uncle picked up me and all my cousins, and we all went down to an A's game. I leaned over the dugout, and Mark McGuire signed an 87 Tops, which is still in my possession.
That's so sick.
I walked up to the field and pregame, and I had a little pamphlet of papers, and Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell, one of the greatest double play combos in the history of the game, handed me signed autographs for me as like a young
That's
kid.
That's dope.
In high school, me and my friends would skip out and drive the 2.5 hours and go sit at A's games and yell at Ricky Henderson and almost get kicked out multiple times because we were talking so much trash. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when I had my boys, it was something, I'd even say, like, I lived in Berkeley for a year. My wife went to UC Berkeley, and I moved down, and we, you know, the hard thing was I had no friends because where I worked, I was a manager, and you can't really have a bunch of friends there.
Yeah.
My wife didn't have friends at UC Berkeley because Berkeley was so highly competitive that no one wants to be your friend. They just want to compete for what's happening at school. And so I had a Coca-Cola card. I would take a BART for $1.60 from
$1.60 for BART
from Berkeley to Oakland. I would sit in the stand sometimes by myself, sometimes with my wife, and like the A's were my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I got older, not only did I start bringing my boys when they were young to A's games, years ago I wrote a long form piece on losing your fandom, because as a beat writer of a team, you're not allowed to be a fan anymore. And as someone who grew up here in Sacramento, like there's a moment where you have to give up being a fan, and like all of that goes away. But I didn't cover the A's, so I could still be a fan, and I could still teach my son, especially my oldest, because my youngest has never been into sports, but my oldest, how to be a fan by taking him to games, taking him to playoff games. And then I have this random thing that I lost connection with a friend that was really close in like 6th, 7th, 8th grade. We were good friends in high school, but again, we had kind of lost our connection.
Yeah.
But he found me on Facebook years ago, and we reconnected by taking our sons to baseball games.
That's incredible.
And
it's so fun.
I would drive down, we'd get to his house, we'd get on a BART and take it into the stadium, and we'd sit there with our boys that were around the same age and kind of be part of what's happening. And I think it is about the memories. It's about being there for big moments, but also seeing some of the greatest things that you've ever seen. And it's about peeing in a trough and and having the outfield grass be perfect
every single time.
The infield, watching the guys go out and drag the field, not only before the game and spray it down, but also, you know what, in this 6th, 7th inning.
Mm.
Like, that's what it's about. It's about, like, having something that is right there, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, so tangible. So I think it's a horrible day. I hate what's happening to the good people of Oakland. You've been to a lot more games because you're so much closer to the stadium than I am.
Yeah.
But when I went to games, they were always special. And I have great memories. And I'm going to be happy to see them in Sacramento as opposed to going straight to Las Vegas. And I hope that they get stuck in Sacramento, and I hope that they're here in Sacramento forever. But I also understand that there's a reality here of poor ownership and what that can mean and what it has meant and how they've stripped away people's ability to be fans. And I hate that, because being a fan of a team is, you know, going out there and taking your 4-year-old to a game and buying him like a Kevin Martin jersey, and then having that, you find it in his drawer 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's what being a fan is. And
yeah, man.
By them never allowing the last 25 years of fans to truly embrace players, embrace like the future, embrace anything mm-hmm. that was tangible, it's just really, really hard. And it's almost like they replaced all of what a normal team would feel for somebody with like books, you know, like Moneyball and these ideas about thinking of the game differently. But at the end of the day, like, I can love the A's because I grew up with Ricky Henderson and Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire and Carney Lansford and Tony Phillips and Dave Henderson. And, you know, I grew up watching like players that were like really, really tangible.
Yeah.
And now it's so gone. And I feel for everybody, especially who's losing their jobs there in Oakland. It's just absolutely horrible.
Yeah, man. Going with my folks tonight. And that's just kind of that was kind of the cool thing, is like you can kind of trace through life, at least for me, and I think this goes for a lot of people. Grew up going to games with my parents, right? Was there for game 3 of the 06 ALDS when the A's finally broke through and they won a division series. They sweep the Twins. Just bananas atmosphere. Just so much fun. And then, you know, start going to games as I get later into high school, and you know, my friends and I can start driving, and we go to games during the summer. And it didn't matter if the A's were good or bad or whatever. We were going to go out, we're going to sit in the bleachers, and we're going to have a great time. We're going to tailgate beforehand, and it was going to be so much fun. My third year of college, really, really struggling personally, just kind of trying to figure out what I was doing. I think a lot of people do it at 19, 20 years old, just trying to figure it out. Scrounged together some pennies and got a 15-game season ticket package in the bleachers for like $200. And the people in the bleachers took me in as one of their own, right? And spent I went to 20 plus games that year, driving in from Sacramento, doing that long drive up 80. But there's nowhere else I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Other than at the Coliseum with the homies. And then my wife and I, when we started dating, we'd go to some A's games. We got season tickets one year, went to 15 or 20 games, however many we went to that year. It's just kind of been, and the whole, like the plan was like, oh yeah, hey, it's someday I'll, you know, hopefully have a kid and we'll get to do this, whether it's at the Coliseum or a different stadium. And that's gone is tough. And that's kind of the part that I'm struggling with this, is I think I would feel this way even if they were tearing down the Coliseum and they were going to a new stadium in Oakland. Like, there would still be that like sadness of leaving a place, because is it objectively a dump? Like, yeah, no, like no doubt. I've been to not a ton of stadiums, but I've been to several other stadiums, and it's like, oh, this is what a modern baseball stadium is supposed to look like. But at the same time, like, if you grew up an A's fan, or you grew up not even an A's fan, I have so many friends who are not A's fans who just love going to A's games, and it's like, yeah, it's a dump, but it's like ours.
Yeah, yeah.
And
same with Arco.
Yeah, right. It's like you can trash Arco all you want, but like, get in there with 18,000 Kings fans or whatever, and you'll realize how special the place is. Like you said, it's the trough, it's, you know, the bleachers, it's the high sky for a 12:37 first pitch. It's that walk across the BART ramp.
It's tough, man. It's tough. Yeah. I get it.
Gonna miss it, dog.
Yeah.
Alas, we persist.
We persist. No, I honestly, the emotion of it for you is, I totally get it. And I'm like super emotional about it too, but the fact is, like, I did go through two full-blown relocation attempts, and you get so jaded by the infighting and the just the chaos and the lies and everything that happens.
Yeah.
When teams decide to do things like this, and owners decide to do things like this.
Yep.
And it makes it so hard, because you do, you know, again, like, how many city council meetings and how many times you're, like, we, yep. I mean, I did an entire documentary on an almost relocation, and it's just really, really difficult to get it. I just feel like, you know.
I'll tell you what, man. Mitch Spence pitching for the A's tonight has a chance to be an all-time legend for me.
There you go.
Get an electric outing from Mitch Spence, and your boy's going to be psyched. Anyway, 6:40 first pitch, A's Rangers.
That's right.
Speaking of first pitches, 4:20 first pitch, 4:00 coverage begins, Mets at Braves. That's a huge battle for a wild card spot. The Braves are two back of the Mets entering this three-game series. They're a game and a half back. Excuse me. They're a game and a half back of the Diamondbacks for the final wild card spot. So, tons to get into with Mets and Braves. Again, we're covering that for you right here on ESPN 1320. 4:00, coverage begins.
What did I just walk into?
You just walked into a very emotional
Mets
Kyle.
And Braves breakdown?
No.
I'm doing a promotion to try and get out of the topic that was making me cry on the radio.
Oh, that was good. What? Thanks. What was that?
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
James?
I'm going to my last A's game tonight.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
So
did we talk about this? Weren't you? Okay, maybe not. Maybe you weren't going to go, James.
I said I was not going to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I did
the game last year. the reverse boycott game?
Yes. Yeah, I recall.
Good last game to go to.
Yeah.
Where are you from again?
I'm from the East Bay.
You're from, okay.
It's a town called Brentwood. About 45 minutes.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. I got you. This is an acceptable response. Like, I'm fine with that. Okay. I'm a little confused by people like who just like the A's, who are really angry or heartbroken over this. Like, oh, I'm an A's fan. I live in Sacramento. I'm really upset about them leaving Oakland. Well, they're coming to Sacramento.
Yeah.
No, I'm upset. Okay, that's fine. I hate what has happened to the city of Oakland. Like, that's mm-hmm. where my anger comes from and frustrations and hurt feelings come from.
Yeah.
Is I hate, one, what the city is going through, period. But, like, the Warriors are gone. You can frame it however you want to. The mm-hmm. Warriors are gone. The
Raiders are gone.
The Raiders are gone. The A's are gone. All of their sports teams are gone. You still have a venue that gets booked. I mean, Usher is in Oakland this weekend. Like, mm-hmm. that's pretty major. Like, Sacramento mm-hmm. didn't get that. San Francisco didn't get that. But that's two nights. That's Saturday mm-hmm. and Sunday. And then that's it. You can book concerts there at the arena. But what are you going to do with that stadium? And I just feel...
playing soccer there, I know.
Yeah. I just feel bad that it's not... That city, in a multitude of different ways, isn't in a better spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like whatever's happened to Oakland, like but it's been since A's moved there. Like, every time that you have something positive that could be like catapulting the city forward, it just gets lost.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just went through one of the greatest runs in NBA, modern NBA history with the team.
Yeah.
And it didn't impact that city.
You lost them, yeah.
You still lost the team.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anyways, that's what's going on. And so I was trying to get the Mets Braves 4 o'clock coverage begins on ESPN 1320 plug in.
Because when you are a sports radio station.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good promo. It's a good job.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's talk about something happy then. What do you want to talk about?
I said the Niners season's over.
Wow. Wow. Now.
There were no tears shared for that.
For those who have not picked up on this on my dear friend Kyle, this is the type of fan that he is.
Yes.
Like, it's...
the eternal pessimist, baby.
Yes. Like, quick. Like, we've texted during Warrior games where it's like 4-2. Oh, it's over. This whole series is over. These guys stink. Do you see the way that just happened? This team stinks. What a run we had, though.
At least I'm consistent.
I think they've won 2 titles since Kyle sent me that text.
That's fine.
Hey, man, I'm trying to coach a fantasy football team with him. And I'm like, bro, you gave up on Brock Purdy in week one.
It was week two. And right. To be fair, the Eagles defense hasn't been playing great. Derek Carr and the Saints have been lighting it up. Brock Purdy didn't have any weapons. I didn't think it was a crazy take.
I know.
I didn't think it was that insane. Turned out to be a bad call, but whatever.
Brock Purdy has the second most yards in the NFL and the 12 most attempts.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's an I don't even know what stat means. Like, he's efficient.
Yeah. That's like having the most three-pointers in the NBA on the 12th most attempts.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
No, everything he's doing is pretty spectacular.
I think it is.
Here's what
Wait a second. You don't think the season's over.
I was being dramatic for the radio, but this has such 2020 vibes to me. This has such a dang, kind of a weird start to the year.
Blocked out a lot of that year. Can you remind me what that was like?
D Ford.
Okay, yeah,
banged
yeah,
up right
yeah,
away.
Yeah,
Richard Sherman had the Achilles thing. Yep. Oddly enough, Nick Bosa gets hurt in week 2. Solomon Thomas hurt in week 2. Jimmy Garoppolo hurt in week 2. Oh. I think somebody got hurt in week 3 too. It was just
the turf. That was the turf year, right?
Yeah, yeah. They played back to back games at MetLife Stadium.
That's right.
It's just like and that's how with Javon Hargrave's injury. And it just, this is how it's starting to feel to me.
The Hargrave injury is tough. The thing with the injuries this time versus in 2020, it feels like it's a slow death.
Yes. Yes.
Rather than an execution. Yeah. 2020 felt like an execution, you know, pardon
week 2,
the terms.
It was just like,
well, that might have done it.
Yeah.
And this one is just like, okay. I mean, Kittle's back at practice. Mm-hmm. Charvarius Ward, like those guys are practicing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right. But we're watching now, right? We're monitoring this moving mm-hmm. forward. It's week three,
mm-hmm.
and we're monitoring this moving forward. Like, all right, got it. Like, that's part of the deal. To me, my feelings, though, are the same. I hate that Debo's out, Christian McCaffrey, all of that stuff. You give me Trent, you give me Brock. You give me Warner, you give me Bosa. I think you still have a really good chance to compete. It's different when you start talking Super Bowl, though. It's mm-hmm. different when you start exactly. talking about beating the Chiefs. I don't know that it's different coming out of the NFC because I can't pinpoint an NFC team yet.
We can't decide. I think Minnesota's good. Other than that, everybody's the same.
They are. Minnesota's good, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they're not, but I don't think Minnesota's like the elite of the, I'm not willing to like say they're the elite sure. of the conference yet.
Not yet.
They're good. Mm-hmm. And can they be around? Will they be around at the end of the season, at the end of the regular season, in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But there's no one where I'm like, you know, when I look at Arizona, when I look at Detroit, there's no one where I'm like, or even New Orleans or Minnesota or mm-hmm. Tampa Bay or Atlanta, I'm like, oh, they're a lot better than the 49ers.
Yeah.
Even with the 49ers banged up.
We'll see. I'm worried about their pass.
Don't lose Trent, don't lose Fred, and don't lose your quarterback. And I think they'll continue to compete.
All right.
See, what do you guys
got? The Christian McCaffrey news was concerning.
That's wild.
Just going to take a trip over to Germany and see what's going on here, spin the blood a little bit, and
yeah.
come on back to the Bay Area.
See how it goes.
That's tough.
All right, man.
Kenny
back today?
Yeah, Kenny's here. TK's here. Jason Jones.
Crick, not Tim Kawakami.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, just make
Trista
sure.
Crick. One of those people will appear on our show all the time. The other one will never, ever, ever appear. And I was offended on my walk this morning. Just walking Sprout, minding our business through the mean streets of Rockland, and these two ladies offended me. Now I'm going to tell everybody why. Couldn't believe it. Happened twice. Had never happened. Ever. Happened twice on the same walk. Couldn't believe it.
Oh.
Couldn't believe it.
D-Lon KC coming up next. That's James. I'm Kyle. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube. The Insider's back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Until then, drink water. Be nice to people. Boop.